ugly loss at Louisville in its rear view and a bye week forthcoming. Notre Dame desperately needed a win to, if not salvage its season, save some good vibes going into that bye week. And Tim Priest or John Bryce, they got it in resounding fashion today, scoring on offense, defense, and special teams, en route to a 48-20 win over number 10 USC.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, we speculated all week about what could happen and what kind of preparation Notre Dame would have. And, give Marcus Freeman and his team a whole bunch of credit for the resilience. And we talked about playing 8 weeks in a row. They didn't look like a tired team tonight, not at all. And as you said, Tim, I mean, they contributed in every imaginable fashion, set a tone early in the game, never let USC's offense really take off. Never let Caleb Williams really take off running the football, contain the big time receivers, just a tremendous defensive performance. Still a lot to be desired on the offensive end of it, and we'll get into that further. But when your defense plays like that and you win the turnover margin 5-0, you're going to run away with a football game like Notre Dame did.
Yeah, I think, guys, when you look at time of possession and you see that Notre Dame only had the ball for 25 minutes, if you only saw that stat, you would have thought, man, not a good night for the Irish. But Notre Dame was remarkably efficient. It capitalized when it got the short fields, which it's not always done. It hit big plays and it scored in special teams. And this was a complete performance in all facets for Notre Dame. Certainly there's more work to be done offensively. But when we hear coaches talk complimentary football, specifically Marcus Freeman, you cannot get more complimentary than what Notre Dame did tonight. The offense fed off of the short fields, energy, and turnovers that the defense supplied, and then special teams, the Jadarian Price 99-yard kickoff return for the touchdown. Again, just the model of complimentary football and, frankly, a season-saving and potentially season-defining win for Notre Dame.
You mentioned time of possession differential between the Irish and USC. Think about this, 49 total snaps for Notre Dame. Caleb Williams registered 50 total snaps on his 37 passes and 13 runs. The key is 23 of 37 with Caleb Williams. The three interceptions is absolutely shocking. And the fact that they limited the explosives is incredible as well. But we should begin with the three interceptions because we joked, if you're going to get some turnovers, they better be fumbles because Caleb Williams doesn't mess up too often. He messed up when they blitzed him. He messed up when they didn't blitz him, and they rattled him a little bit. I think that first interception by Xavier Watts, where he was pressured, a little bit of a high throw, that was a huge turning point in the game, because if USC gets some confidence and goes down and scores and Notre Dame has to reevaluate, it gets a little different out there. But Notre Dame set the tone early, strength versus strength, and it was Notre Dame's strength by knockout.
Yeah, after Williams threw his third interception, I went back and started adding up his stats at USC. Through 666 passes, he had thrown six interceptions over last year and this year. After 18 passes in the Notre Dame game, he threw another. He added 50% to his total. Just absolutely tremendous. And, you know, we talked about can they put enough pressure on him with a four-man rush? Not always. They ended up sending Benjamin Morrison on one of the interceptions, and certainly J.D. Bertrand. They did some things with Leofau. But by and large, I think, and we'll have to go over the film of it, but they did a pretty decent job, all things considered, putting pressure on him with four guys. And then just a tremendous job of staying in their lanes, being disciplined. Williams can kill you with his feet. He rarely did anything like that. Al Golden's game plan was just spectacular.
It really was. That's what I one of the very first questions any of us asked Marcus Freeman post game was specifically about Al Golden. And I thought this was as good a performance as we've seen out of Al Golden in his 2 years here at Notre Dame. And I thought this was as good a defensive coordinator performance as maybe we've seen anywhere this season in college football. I thought it was that elite. And I think that not only speaks to Al Golden's football acumen, I would contend it also speaks to his experience. He's been a head coach. He's worn those headsets. He's known what it's like to have to bounce back from adversity, especially when you've maybe lost a game that people like us didn't think they should have lost last week at Louisville. I just think that Al Golden makes about $2 million a year as Notre Dame's defensive coordinator, and I don't know anybody that would tell you he didn't earn every penny tonight.
Well, $2 million a year, plus he's going to get his second Ferrari from Sam Hartman, we found out post-game. So that's a nice little perk of being Sam Hartman's defensive coordinator when he was your quarterback. But I had 15 – I wrote down, and this does not count the last drive and a half when I know there were pressures with Jalen Steed and others. I wrote down 15 pressures, not 15 different people. I mean, 15 total plays in which they were pressured, all three of the interceptions. And on many of these, I have multiple pressures and sacks. In other words, I wrote Mills Leafau sack, Mills Osafa Mensah, Mills pressure with Cross, Mills pressure with JJB, Bertrand with JJB. They were all over Caleb Williams as they needed to be, but Timmy made a good point. You can't just keep coming at him. He's going to figure it out. So at times, they were so disciplined in the rush lanes, and I thought Bertrand said it best. They were able to pressure him sometimes by just keeping him in the pocket.
Oh, yeah.
Fourth quarter, it collapsed on him. That was when it started to collapse on Caleb Williams. Corralling him was the whole game to start it off for the Irish.
Yeah, you could see there were times where he, you know, he thought he had an escape route, and it was shut off. Of those 15 pressures, Tim, how many do you think were just four down linemen? I don't know.
No, but most of the time I wrote it down, it was a defensive lineman. I see a DJ Brown, I see a J.D. Bertrand, but I have, well, Traore. First of all, we'll get to that later when we get to all the defensive heroes. That came out of nowhere, but, you know, they are mostly defensive linemen. It was – this is unofficial, but I have JJB for five pressures, including his sack. I mean, he was all over the field. I thought that was key, but of course, limiting the explosives behind you is very important too. As we said, when you blitz, you could also get burned, and then there's fewer guys there. I have two 20-yard passes, one for 20, one for 21, a 31-yard touchdown run in which you saw the speed. Every once in a while, you see that USC speed. They had that 38-yarder callback as well, and a 17-yard run. Other than that, there were no explosives by USC, except, of course, the 60-yard punt return. And, boy, you could see that coming after he made a couple fakes. And Notre Dame was able to pay them back in special teams. But if you're going to limit USC to that, four explosives from scrimmage and, of course, the 60-yard punt return, that's great tackling. That's a great job by the back seven as well.
Yeah, and they, you know, Brennan Rice had two catches for 18 yards. He scored a touchdown. It's his eighth of the year.
It was a beautiful pass. It took forever to get the ball to him, too.
Exactly. But Benjamin Morrison did a great job on him. I think Rice will look back at this, and maybe there were some drops involved, but they just did a fantastic job on him. When Michael Jackson III is their leading receiver with six catches for 51 yards, you know that that Notre Dame was forcing them to go to alternatives. Jackson's been a contributor for several years, and he had eight catches coming into the game, but he didn't hurt them. And Marshawn Lloyd, I was really, really concerned about what he would do against Notre Dame. He had eight carries for 46 yards, but 31 of them came on that one carry. So that means seven carries for 15 yards otherwise. And, you know, the offensive stats way against Notre Dame. Notre Dame had 13 first downs, just 13 first downs and 251 yards total offense. But if you look at yards per play, I think USC was at 4.1, which means they had, you know, in order for them to have success, they had to really string plays together. And they weren't good enough against Notre Dame's defense to string consistent plays together.
And to some of the mind-boggling stats, and you know, Caleb Williams is the reigning Heisman Trophy winner. He'll have a hard time recovering from this to repeat. But the player who most looked like a Heisman Trophy candidate tonight was Xavier Watts. And I really am not even joking in saying that. Here's one. We all know the turnover numbers that he put forth, and he had seven tackles. Here's what I love. He had 76 all-purpose yards. Behind Deion Branch, he had – the most all-purpose yards of anybody on Southern Cal's team. So just a really splendid performance from the converted wide receiver. Again, we saw USC speed, but we've talked about it. I thought we saw more of Notre Dame's speed tonight on defense, particularly with some of the younger guys that I know we're going to dive into more. The performance from Xavier Watts and really the entire secondary, Notre Dame still had some penalties but cut down on them. USC's penalties were far more detrimental to the Trojans than what Notre Dame's were.
Yeah, I did want to add that the penalties, nine for USC, Notre Dame had five, which is a pretty good day for them. But, and you know, that was something, Tim, in our pregame stuff, I had wanted to mention about, you know, we talk about Notre Dame and a lack of discipline with their penalties, but USC is a heavily penalized football team. Yep. And it showed again tonight, and a couple of those were really significant, including a touchdown run by Caleb Williams that was negated.
We're going to take a break from Mel Golden after this and come back to the Irish defense to wrap up later. But six of the first eight drives by Notre Dame were defensive wins, four of the final five as well. Because you know what we say about field goals, go ahead and kick them. There's no such thing as field goals anymore. When you're playing USC, they're kicking field goals, that's fine. The Irish just from start to finish. And remember, USC had a short field touchdown too. Now they earned it. Zachariah Branch had a 60-yard punt return because he's one of the quicker guys out there. That was one of their touchdown drives. It was an 18-yard drive. It was just a phenomenal effort by the defense. But the offense, plenty to work on. I think it's really important to point out, though, among when Estime gets 95 yards rushing, there was a solid push for Audric Estime today up front that allowed him to be limited in the amount of run stuffs he's going to get. You're going to get some run stuffs against USC because their athletes are firing. And as you said, Tim, they will take chances. They're going to get some run stuffs. But 95 yards, I thought the offensive line gave him a solid push tonight.
Yeah, good for Joe Rudolph and a bounce-back performance by the offensive line. They were hammered over the course of the week. But they played poorly. Part of it had to do with maybe rotating guys last week against Louisville. For everybody that doesn't know, Louisville, of course, lost to Pittsburgh tonight. But, a real bounce-back performance, no rotation that I'm aware of. They stayed with the five. And then one, the same way that we came out of last week's game saying that Notre Dame lost the line of scrimmage, USC totally lost the line of scrimmage to Notre Dame tonight on both sides of the football. And that's with Notre Dame having 251 yards total offense. But to your point, Tim, the rushing of Estime and then the timely hits from Sam Hartman, allowed them to – it's just phenomenal when you look at the stats and to think that Notre Dame had 48 points.
Yeah, and again, to that point, yes, Notre Dame dominated both lines of scrimmage without question. I thought that Notre Dame's edge discipline was much better this time, and I also thought that we saw a number of good things from Notre Dame, the way that it collapsed the pocket on USC. As I've lost my lighting here, but I'll get that turned back on. But really, really fabulous work by the defense. And yes, again, absolutely more room for improvement for the Notre Dame offense. But also the fact that by 10 minutes into the second quarter, Notre Dame had a 17-3 lead, and it was so throttled down on USC's offense, that let Notre Dame be a little bit more deliberate with its pace, a little bit more judicious and some things it tried. And we still saw some new wrinkles tonight. We still saw Jordan Faison grow his role a little bit. We saw some other formations and shifts that we had not seen. So I do think ugly numbers are 13 first downs and 25 minutes of possession and 250 yards, but it's not an ugly number when you're part of a win against USC. And I believe there was growth tonight from the offense.
I think it would have been more fitting if we would have lost Bryce's video to the darkness. If it had been last week in Louisville when everything was just kind of all, but now it's just good news. So there's
it's JB after dark. We got JB after dark today.
Yeah, Chris Tyree, I think we said after four games, he just makes one big play every game. He made two today. Crucial one, the 46-yard touchdown. It did feel like Notre Dame needed that touchdown there. I mean, they definitely needed it on the scoreboard because it was close to the time, but it felt that gave Notre Dame that little bit of breathing room and the defense could then reset and take over and win the game for the Irish. You got to be happy for Chris Tyree. It's notable that he's made a big play in basically every game. That is what you could expect a high end from a converted running back going to slot receiver that did all the work in the offseason to get there. That was a huge touchdown play for
him. Yeah, and I thought it was really a cool tribute from Sam Hartman after the game to Chris Tyree and talking about his unselfishness and willingness to move to a different position in your senior year. And that's the Chris Tyree that we know, certainly. But, he continues to make a play. Yeah, I mean, sometimes two, but, I mean, usually one play, right, Tim? I mean, it's usually one
play. It's usually one play. I pointed out he had two this time because Notre Dame had three total third down conversions. That was lost on me during the game. They only had three third down conversions. Chris Tyree had one for 16 yards. Holden stays in the fourth quarter. And Jabron Payne on the touchdown. There's going to be a lot of complaints about the offense. That was a wonderful call at the goal line to start Notre Dame off with a touchdown.
Let me just say this about the offense, and Jared Parker still continues to struggle to find his rhythm and his touch and his feel for it all. But I think the short fields that the offense got, it certainly impacted the amount of yardage that Notre Dame had. But when they had those short fields, they generally took advantage of it. I do want to also throw out my favorite. I thought there were a lot of phrases from the post game, especially for Marcus Freeman and a couple of players. But I loved his comment. Pete Sampson picked up on it, being an anti-fragile program. I think that that's such a unique phrase that that he implemented this week. And you had to be anti-fragile because Notre Dame Nation was saying that the season was over. There wasn't anything to play for. How in the world are they going to keep up with USC? And they epitomized the phrase anti-fragile program tonight.
Yeah, and they made USC look fragile tonight. They did both physically and I think mentally, because there was a moment in the game, guys, where Caleb Williams had another of his turnovers, and he headed towards that USC sideline, visibly upset. He was demonstrative. He was chirping, whether it was at himself or his teammates or whatever. He exited that field really frustrated, really upset. I think that's significant. T.O., you had a great note about how many explosives USC had in this game. Here's the other thing. Coupled with that, so few explosives and only two red zone trips for USC. You'll have a chance to beat USC every time when you bottle up their explosives to basically four explosive plays and only give up two red zone trips. And then also noteworthy, again, a lot of inherited short fields, but Notre Dame, 5 for 5 in the red zone. So 5 turnovers, 5 for 5 in the red zone. Again, that's the magic formula for Notre Dame football right now.
I want to interject because we do want to take a couple of questions. Andy Dan asks, and we all have this exact answer ready. I've been waiting for it. Andy Dan says, how do we look this bad last week but look this good against a better team? College football happens all the time.
That's college football. It's college football. And Louisville, I haven't seen it yet, but they obviously played like crap tonight. I mean, it's just the nature of the game, because of its physicality and the amount of mental and emotional strain that players and teams go through. It happens every week in college football.
Louisville handled success this week with their practice week and preparing for Pittsburgh.
What'd you say, Tim? I mean, they probably didn't
didn't practice till Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday. By Thursday, they were ready to start practicing again.
Did you go to Sam Hartman? Dropped a little shot in there as well.
Yeah.
He said, I heard Louisville lost. Well, that's a shame along those ways. So I think he was feeling that one. We might as well get to Sam Hartman now. It was obviously – this is an interesting comment to me. I'm not sure the colleague wants me to say it live, so I'm going to just not use his name. He said, until the Chris Tyree throw, that was game-managing, Drew Pine-led offense. Not ripping on Hartman, saying they are being as careful as they can be right now. Yeah. Sam Hartman really did not let it loose today. That was obviously a tremendous pass to an open receiver. But Hartman was a game manager today, and it worked out because the defense was the best unit on the field by far. Notre Dame was getting a push up front, and as JB said, when you have a bunch of short yardage drives, when you're set up for success and touchdowns and you believe Estime can get a push, that's what you're going to stick with. Sam Hartman said he made a joke. He's like, I finally won a big one. But this was one where he kind of guided them through it, knowing that the defense was going to carry the day.
Well, I'm leafing through right now. I mean, Notre Dame had a double-digit lead for the last 34 minutes of the game. Correct. So – you know, before it's a complete knee-jerk reaction about everything that Jarrod Parker does, and again, I don't think it was a strong performance by him. I agree with the comment to a large extent about the colleague that you referred to, Tim. But when you're up by double digits, you know, and you are facing a Caleb Williams, and you know you don't want to put football back in his arm, back in his hand. You approach it a little bit differently, but it was conservative, and I didn't find fault with all of the times that it was conservative, largely because Notre Dame did have a double digit lead, and then it became an 18 point lead. Now it's 3 scores, and now you're going to approach it a little bit more deliberately, than you did before.
Sorry, TP. And to the great statement from Sam Hartman about the selflessness of Chris Tyree, let's point out the selflessness of Sam Hartman. He transferred to Notre Dame as arguably the most accomplished passer in ACC history with 110 career touchdown passes. He has completely retooled his game to fit the Notre Dame offense. Again, going back to that complementary football. And again, Notre Dame played complementary football tonight. And part of that was just the way that Sam Hartman isn't insistent on taking chances if they're not there downfield. Or it is Sam Hartman this week running for 12 yards to get a much needed first down, not risking a slide, making sure he got all the way past the sticks again. So, you know, there was a lot of selflessness on display. And to wrapping up Indy Dan's question, also, I would say how they performed so much better this week. We talked about it on pregame instant analysis. There was a freedom, I think, that this program started to feel as the week went along, a freedom from any pressure and an absolute buildup of anger and frustration and wanting to show that they are much more closer to being the team we saw tonight than the team we saw last Saturday night.
And to put a bow on what the offensive line did, now not including the fourth quarter, where obviously the USC stats would have gone down here as well, but not including the fourth quarter, Notre Dame was about 65% rush efficiency, and USC was under 50%. That's going to win games against USC as well. Obviously, things changed a little bit in the fourth quarter, but Notre Dame didn't care about the rush efficiency in the fourth quarter either because they had handled it.
Guys, when you hold USC to 4 yards per snap, not 4 yards per carry, 4 yards per snap, I mean, you are dictating the tempo of the game. You get those quick scores, those short field scores. You know, the offense has to be better. Jared Parker has to be better and has to be more creative. But I don't know that I would ding him nearly as much, especially later in the game. Earlier in the game, I get that. Although, again, Notre Dame, we can talk about double-digit leads. They led for, you know, 57 minutes, almost 58 minutes. So you're working from a position of strength then.
And then I think, obviously, the game officially ended, unofficially ended, when Jadarian Price answered the 18-yard touchdown drive with a 99-yard kickoff return touchdown. We do have a couple questions about that formation. We asked Marcus Freeman postgame, the three kick returners. I thought it was a wrinkle that maybe they saw something in USC. It turns out it was a wrinkle just in case there was really bad weather. That's why there were three kick returners. Marcus Freeman said they started practicing on Monday. I asked Jadarian Price. But the 99-yarder, I had written down notes, Tim Priester and John Bryce, about how good Devin Ford looked on his 26- and 25-yard returns, because that was the best kick return day they had probably this year as a unit, and then Jadarian Price hits the home run.
Go ahead, JB.
Yeah, the three-man issue or the three-man deployment, part of the weather preparations this week, and we knew they'd been doing stuff all week, some wet ball drills, hosing the guys down. Really interesting that they had tested those return men with spraying water on them or shouting at them as they're getting ready to field wet balls. Turned out to be very good preparation, but unneeded. But I think the three deep return men took USC by surprise. And again, we've talked about how much faster Notre Dame has gotten in key spots. It still has to get faster overall. But this was a situation where Jadarian Price, coming back from that torn ACL last summer, or excuse me, Achilles last summer, still gets the angle, cuts outside. He said he felt like he ran 140 yards. And, you know, if I was better at math, well, I wouldn't be a writer. But if I was better at math, I could also probably tell you how close he came to running 140 yards. But he did have a tremendous cutback on that play. We saw Spencer Schrader being incredibly efficient and consistent tonight. So, yes, USC broke that one. But I thought overall a very clean, efficient game for the most part for Notre Dame special teams, and it played a huge difference in the win.
Very quickly, Tim, I want to interject because they broke the punt. We kept saying every time Spencer Schrader go to kickoff, you could put it in the end zone, put it in the end zone. Don't mess with Zachariah Branch back there.
I think the win prevented him from doing that. Yeah. You know, hey, good for Marty Biagi. He needed a good night in the return game, and it ended up being a spectacular night. And as you said, Tim, Devin Ford, you know, when we first interviewed Dylan McCullough about Devin Ford coming to Notre Dame, the first thing he said was, I don't know if you guys were there, Tim, or I'm not sure if you guys were there, but he said, well, you know, first of all, we knew he was a good special teams guy. And I thought, you know, I mean, that's just kind of verbiage that you're throwing out there. But he's a really good special teams guy. He's a solid kick returner and you know, really tremendous on the coverage team. He forced a fumble recently. I don't know if it was last week or the week before.
Against Louisville, they didn't.
It was Louisville. Okay, yeah. No, I mean, Marty Biagi really needed that. He really needed that because when you follow Brian Mason – that is one tough act to follow, and he hasn't really come close to it, certainly in terms of, you know, block punts and kicks and stuff like that. But good for him. He needed that. And Jadarian Price, I mean, I know Jadarian Price is, I think, a little bit – he's such a great interview. It's such, he seems like such a great kid, you know, every time we have that opportunity. But, yeah, we've heard that he's a little frustrated that he's not getting a whole lot of touches in the run game. And I would be frustrated if I were him too, because I think that he has, you know, earlier in the season warranted more carries. But when you have Estime and we know the breakaway ability of Love, you understand that they're going to narrow it down a little bit. But just good for Jadarian Price and Marty Biagi. They both needed a performance like tonight.
Couple questions. Go ahead, JB.
I was just going to say, and very briefly wrapping that up, when you factor in Notre Dame's return yardage tonight, just kickoff return yardage from Devin Ford and Jadarian Price, is nearly 170 yards. That changes a little bit of what we see in terms of production. That's putting Notre Dame right around 420 yards offense and kickoff return yardage. Again, that's significant. A lot of work to be done, but once again, I keep repeating myself, that is the epitome of complementary football.
Right, there's one thing I have to push back on because I just took a look at it, and he's made some good points in this chat, so I don't want to focus on the bad one. But Samick31 saying, look, I'm really happy about the win, but Hartman and the offense were bad tonight, I thought. Slightly better than the Louisville game. They were not slightly better than the Louisville game. They were 100% better than the Louisville game because they got a push up front the entire time and had zero turnovers as opposed to five turnovers, and they protected Sam Hartman throughout. Now, third down is a work in progress for Notre Dame that is becoming a bit of a problem. I think we're on a four-game – Notre Dame's on a four-game run here of having issues on third down. They're going to have to find their way out of that, or they're going to get into a tight game with the likes of – well, it could easily be Clemson, of course. But one of these other teams is going to rise up and make it tough on Notre Dame if they're 3 of 10, 3 of 12, 4 of 15 on third down. I don't know what the answer is there because I think some players have to make plays too. And certainly USC, I thought, took Mitchell Evans out of this game. If you told me those have been Mitchell Evans stats, I'd have thought Notre Dame might have lost this game, actually.
Yeah, and
you could be he's frustrated with the offense, which I get, but
I get that too. But when you complain about the play calling and receivers are dropping passes, I mean, I don't think that you're really evaluating everything that's happening out there. And again, I've said it, and I mean it. Jared Parker needs to do a better job. But when Notre Dame goes three and out, and there's two drop passes of the three plays, let's be a little bit more objective about why it is happening. But Parker needs a reboot, a clean sweep. But let's not underestimate the fact that they didn't turn the football over. While, of course, USC did five times. So still not pretty. I totally get it. 13 first downs, not good enough. 251 yards, not good enough. 3 of 10 on third down, not good enough. But a way better performance than last week because, as you said, Tim, the offensive line, they won the line of scrimmage.
And they lost last week.
Absolutely.
Question I didn't think about, but you guys, we were not on the field with 5 minutes left. Because Caleb Williams sailed a couple passes. Sam Hartman sailed a couple passes. William Matz asked, did the wind affect passing the stadium tonight? I did not find it that way when I was on the field. I did not think it was overly windy today. But it's a good point because, I mean, Caleb Williams' first interception totally sailed. Sam Hartman missed a couple high that he had a chance at. He missed Mitch Evans high. He missed Rico Flores high. I hadn't thought about that. Did you guys notice? Did you think there was any wind reaction?
Yeah. I mean, I generally agree with you, but I thought if you looked at the flags on the goalpost, right. the one in the south end zone had a lot more activity. The north end zone looked like there wasn't any wind.
Right.
Now, I know the first interception was throwing with the wind. I mean, I'd have to think about.
It's difficult because the fans at home are watching an opposite angle than us, by the way. I don't know if they know that or not.
Yes.
You're looking on the other side.
No, very, very true. JB, I don't know. I didn't think that the wind was huge.
I didn't pick up on it there in the last 5 minutes. I got to the field at exactly 4:54 left of the game, and I didn't notice immediately it being overly windy or anything like that. That's not to say it might not have been. Earlier in the contest, I talked to people throughout the game via text. They were sitting in the stands. Nobody was texting me like, oh, my gosh, it's so windy out here.
Yeah.
So I did not pick up on that enough to think that was a legitimate factor. I think more than anything, Sam missed a couple of throws he very much would like to have back. And I think Caleb Williams got affected early, and Notre Dame hit him a lot, and Notre Dame got to him a lot. Notre Dame kept him from being comfortable all night long.
There's several defensive players we should talk about today. I mean, there's two handfuls of defensive players we could talk about from this game, but we'll start with, we've already covered Xavier Watts quite a bit, but Xavier Watts will probably be Notre Dame's second National Defensive Player of the Week in 3 weeks after Howard Cross against Duke. Two interceptions of Caleb Williams, a fumble recovery touchdown, a forced fumble, six solo tackles. He had a pass stuff. He was all over the field, and there's a joke on here that said maybe we should thank Dell Alexander's recruiting because he gave us Xavier Watts. Of course, Xavier Watts moving from wide receiver to safety. He didn't really take the bait today when he was asked that question in postgame, but that is a breakout game for Xavier Watts. I made a Monday Musings top 10 players, and I had Watts was waiting to get on. He's on. Xavier Watts is on that.
Yeah, he's on. Hey, and, you know, Riley Mills, again, I think he played very effectively for them. JJB does it on a consistent basis now.
JJB, I have four pressures, one sack, one fumble recovery, and half run stuff. So three, that means three. Yeah. He helped out on three run stuff.
That's JD Bertrand, the huge fourth and one stop where I don't even – I mean, what a spectacular play. He was in the backfield so quickly. It was incredible.
The second best thing about that was he had a huge third and one stop on the play before to give himself a fourth and one stop.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not ask questions about J.D. Bertrand on our podcast anymore. Those are not allowed.
Well, I think, I mean, isn't
it? They're no longer allowed.
Isn't it? Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I mean, isn't it? I think it's become pretty universal now that, and I mean, 2 years ago, you couldn't get anybody to say anything good about J.D. Bertrand. Obviously, he is a top-notch college linebacker. I don't know how you can see it any other way at this point. And the notion that he's not quick is ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
The play he had,
J.B., his best game this year.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And the play that he had on the run stuff, where he met the ball carrier 3 or 4 yards deep in the backfield, and then Caleb Williams, to his credit, had the football IQ, the presence of mind that he wanted to try to wrestle the ball away from the ball carrier and still try to get the first down for USC. So J.D. Bertrand just blew them both up. That was a brilliant play. And we talked earlier about X Watts in preseason going into the first month of the season. And I think we all said it. We just said the guy's a football player. Now we're seeing a natural football player learning to play much more naturally at the safety position. And I really think he's got a high ceiling from here.
Hey, Tim, I see we have a comment about the guy opposite Watts was invisible in the best possible way. Not that brilliant tackle that DJ Brown made of Marshawn Lloyd behind the line of scrimmage. Was that third down? Maybe it was
third down to force a punt that Jalen Steed jumped off sides.
Yeah.
So they were able to go for it on
fourth down. I mean, we're in the business of selective credit and blame many times. There it is. Great run stuff. Yeah, absolutely. I it's better when he is invisible, DJ Brown. I get that. I understand the sentiment of that. But he made a play too. You know, it was just a really great effort. And you have to feel great for this team again, because the way we were talking a week ago, I mean, how in the world is this team going to mentally, physically, emotionally be prepared to play? And they were at their peak.
Well, I thought mentally they'd be prepared to play because it's USC.
And yeah, no, I get that.
Absolutely have to be prepared to play USC, but you're at the end of your rope physically. That they are definitely at the end of the rope physically.
And well, and being at the end of your rope physically can impact you mentally. That's my only point with it.
You know, there's some questions about Benjamin Morrison maybe not having the best game. And well, it wasn't his best game, of course, but Benjamin Morrison had an interception. He had a tackle for loss on a pass. And I have him for 3 coverage wins and 2 coverage losses. So I think you're going to take that every single time Benjamin Morris is involved in a game against the people he's playing against. He's not covering Notre Dame's receivers.
Right.
He speak ill of the dead, but he is covering USC's receivers. This is a much tougher job with Caleb.
This is the deepest, most impressive receiving core in the country. I shouldn't say that because I don't know everybody in the country, which I always complain about, but yeah, Ben Morrison lost a couple reps. Yes, he did, against the best receiving core in the country. And I mean, the limiting of that group, nobody does that to them.
Yeah.
And briefly, Cam Hart,
yeah,
just three tackles, but he forced a fumble. He had another, I think, a tackle for loss.
Second straight week he forced a fumble, the same type of play where he strips the guy. It was really nice.
Yeah, so forced a fumble, a tackle for loss, when USC was still trying to muster some things to put them further behind the sticks. So, again, a number of guys defensively really emerged for Notre Dame.
You know, I thought Leafau made a couple of plays, pressure in the pocket as well, especially when they started caving in the pocket on Caleb Williams. But did you realize how fast Caleb Williams was when that game started? And Maris thought he had an angle, and Caleb Williams just glided by him for 13 yards. Everybody said, well, he has not seen that speed from a quarterback before. That cat can run, because he went around Leafau like he was standing still. And we know Leafau has been hawking quarterbacks all year long when they're out in the perimeter.
Hey, before we forget, and I slipped in a third question to Marcus Freeman because I wanted to clarify, but you know, he called the timeout late in the first half, and a lot of people were saying bad timeout. And if I mean, he saw what we saw, and that was Leafau, Boubacar Traore, and
Snead.
It was Snead. They're celebrating their sack at the end of the first half, and they are 15 yards offside.
Well, yeah, and that is not. Oh, that's Caleb Williams. So that is not just 5 yards if they snap the ball. That's Caleb Williams saying, "All right, you're offsides. You got eight defenders. What's he going to try to do on a free play?"
Right, right.
That was a hugely important timeout, and it is a good teaching moment. Xavier Watts also, I don't know if you noticed, he did stop at about the one. He started slowing down the one.
Oh, yeah, we were in the end zone by then, yeah. Yeah,
there were a few moments they got away with, and that was a big one. Jalen Snead's roughing did cost them, although they ended up stopping on that drive. But Jalen Snead had his best day as well. We talk about J.D. Bertrand having his best day. I asked Bertrand about Jalen Snead. I said, one of your reserve linebackers. His eyes lit up. He's like, you could tell he is helping bring along Snead now in year number two, where Snead realizes he has a role and he's getting better at it.
JB?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been talking about that. And again, he's getting comfortable in what he's being asked to do. They're trusting him a little bit more. They need his speed on the field more often against these opponents like this, particularly a USC team that is so dynamic from the quarterback position, as well as all those skilled players. So, yeah, he is earning their trust the way that he first started to ever so gradually in preseason camp. And they've shown, or he's shown the coaches as the weeks have progressed, that he's not just making plays here and there, but he's banking experience and growing off of that experience. I would quickly agree with, I think it was Adam that just posted that Ohio State's wide receiver room is better than USC's.
It's not deeper. I mean, the two, there are the two best. I get that, but it's not. We said wide receiver core. If you said,
I think that's different. Yeah, they're looking at it differently.
Who has the two best receivers? Okay, Ohio State. But we're talking. We said wide receiver core, and that's. I mean, they have nine guys with at least eight catches going into tonight.
I'm glad Igbuka wasn't out there though.
I am too. He was hurt today. I don't think he played today. By the way, Ohio State. To your point, John, about Snead, good time of year for that. I mean, you're now going into the final stretch, the final one third of the season, and you need players like that to start stepping up. You need Jordan Faison to step up. It was good to see them get him involved. He didn't have the performance that he did last week, but you know, at this time of year, some of those guys need to step forward. Jadarian Price. Step forward tonight when they really needed him.
All right, Priester, you have a question asked. Because you offered it, I'm allowed to ask you this question. You apparently offered it pregame in Irish Illustrated Overtime. 10-2 Major Bowl question for Tim Priester.
Will they finish 10-2?
I guess you said it in overtime. If they win, you should expect them to go 10-2.
I expect them to go 10-2.
I do as well, but not without a hiccup.
Well, I mean – Clemson won't be. I know there's the perception that Clemson.
No, I mean, one of the other three will also be.
And who it probably is? It's probably Wake Forest, because we always take them for granted.
Right.
And it's an extremely well coached program. And it's the last home game, November. Notre Dame has tendency sometimes to drift a little bit.
I'm still on Pitt after today, especially.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to disagree with the notion that there may be a hiccup. And I have known Dave Clawson since he was at Tennessee in 2008. We've stayed in contact through the years. it's not going to be Wake Forest this year, in my opinion. They lost 30-13 today to a very middling Virginia Tech team. I just don't see this remotely being the same Wake Forest team. The Wake Forest nearly lost, and they trailed by two or three touchdowns a couple of weeks ago at Old Dominion, which is a solid group of five program, but not what you expect them to do against Wake Forest. So I do think that there'll be a couple of games that Notre Dame still has to win in the final 15 to 20 minutes on the clock.
That's what I meant. In the fourth quarter,
but I don't think it's going to be Wake Forest.
All right, that's fair enough, John. I'll take that. I'll concede that to you, certainly. I just have a lot of respect for Dave Clawson, but you're right. It's not – they are doing things that we're not accustomed to seeing with Wake Forest. Stanford, their comeback on Friday night was incredible.
I could never imagine a Stanford team upsetting Notre Dame, so I don't know why we would even
– I still don't see that happen. I'm not – off the top of my head, I'm actually not sure who Pittsburgh plays next week before Notre Dame. Notre Dame, they're not so far along offensively where you can just assume. When I say 10-2, I didn't say there wasn't going to be a struggle. Clemson, first of all, going to Clemson, regardless of the circumstances or records or whatever, that is going to be. I mean, I can't wait to get in that environment. It's going to be tremendous. But do I think that? I think Notre Dame should go 10-2. You got to go to Clemson and win. I get that. But I think that this will be a huge boost for this program, especially getting a little bit of time off now, being able to catch their breath.
I'm going to withhold my 10-2 versus 9-3 comment for Monday musings, but I don't want to put any damper on things, especially since I picked USC to win this game. I don't want to end on Boubacar Traore, because that would be a strange thing to do for the USC game, but that sack was a pretty big deal on third down, and you and I looked at each other. I've been watching the game with binoculars. Just turns out teams don't throw downfield that much when they're playing Notre Dame or Notre Dame's playing other teams. It's worked out really well for me. I couldn't believe I saw 51 screaming around the corner on that play because it was just inserting him into the game, and that was a sack. Tim, when you said this is time for Jalen Snead to keep growing, there's another player that they could use to keep here.
I mean, that pass rush was incredible.
It was fantastic. Yeah,
I mean, he flat out, he whipped their right tackle. There was never any doubt about it. After his first step, you knew he was going to gain the advantage. It was incredible. Now, freshman run around. He's in total celebration mode, 15 yards offside.
That's right.
I think I'm tugging on your arm. What are you doing? Get back on.
It's Leofau's fault. He's been there 10 years. He's celebrating.
Leofau, there's no excuse for Leofau on that one. But I realize that Freeman was criticized, but to have the presence of mind to call a timeout there, I guess in retrospect, it's like, oh, well, of course, you had guys offside. I thought it was a really, really great decision made on his part in a split second when you had no time to think about it.
Yeah, and you made a great point earlier to say, hey, that's Caleb Williams across the line of scrimmage that you almost gave a free play to as the clock was winding down. A completely free play that's nothing to lose, because even if the clock expires, it's a dead ball foul on Notre Dame. USC would have gotten an untimed down, even if it snapped the ball there and threw an incompletion, an interception, anything. So it was proactive of Marcus Freeman to take that timeout. Boubacar Traore, I thought we saw him flash that speed at school field when we went to the open scrimmage in preseason camp. And we said, wow, that's different. How long will it take him to make an impact? I thought that this was a great call by the coaches, again, Al Golden and everyone else, to deploy him tonight when nobody had really seen him. And then to James saying that I'm going black ops tonight. It's motion sensor lights here in Innovation Park, but some people might claim that those black lights flickering could be for both USC's playoff hopes and USC's Heisman Trophy hopes.
Well, USC's going to lose again. I mean, they have to go to Oregon. They have to play Washington. They're going to lose one of those games. Traore, actually, Marcus Freeman gave us a hint when somebody asked earlier in the week about who would play Viper. It might have actually been Thursday. He did mention Traore's name. So not a complete shock, but when you see number 51 coming off the edge as a freshman in the USC game with as much at stake as there was, that is a you know, and when we evaluated him coming out of high school, my original impression was he was a strong side end. Now we saw him in August, and I think we all came to the conclusion, okay, that's a Viper. But that's huge because Notre Dame has had difficulty finding true rush guys at the Viper position.
Notre Dame is 6-2 heading into its bye week, but as we all know, they are really 1-0 in the college football tragedy of 12 one-game seasons. The Irish 48, USC 20 for Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated, John Bryce of FootballScoop.com. Thanks for watching Irish Illustrated Overtime.